You're listening to Red Nation Online.
You're listening to the North of 49 Soccer Podcast. Interviews, analysis, and discussion about Canadian soccer with hosts Chris Williams and Steve Watcher. All right, here we are with the first edition of the North of 49 podcast. My name is Steve Watcher, and I'm a writer and managing editor at Red Nation Online. And I'm here with my new co-host, Chris Williams, who has a background in the game of soccer from both a business standpoint and as a player with the Vancouver Whitecaps, Montreal Impact, and the Canadian men's national team. Chris, how are you doing, and how excited are you about both the week that was in Canadian soccer and everything else we have coming up in 2012, both in the professional leagues and at the international level?
First of all, thank you very much for having me on board here. It's great to be a part of Red Nation. And it's definitely an exciting time in Canadian football, Canadian soccer, with all these games, Champions League matches, the inaugural season for the Montreal Impact, and obviously their first game against their rivals, the Vancouver Whitecaps. And of course, we have the Canadian national team playing against Armenia, trying to prepare for the World Cup qualification round. So, yeah, it's an exciting time. As a former player, I can't wait to see all this unfold, and hopefully it's for all the best for all the Canadians involved, Canadian teams and Canadian players.
So as the name of the podcast suggests, our focus here is going to be on Canadian soccer, and on a weekly basis we'll be talking about a wide spectrum of topics, and we already have a number of interesting guests and contributors lined up for the coming weeks. Chris, our guest on this week's podcast is a former national teammate of yours, and we did an interview with him that we pre-recorded a couple of days ago.
Yes, it was with Julian de Guzman, who's one of Canada's premier soccer players, and Julian's played in Germany, played in La Liga in Spain, and now currently plays with TFC, and it's a tribute and a pleasure to have him on board as our first guest on North of 49 podcast.
All right, that interview will be coming up a little later in the podcast. But first up, you and I are going to talk a little bit about some of the extremely exciting games that occurred over the last week or so with the TFC LA Galaxy Champions League match, the MLS opener between the Montreal Impact and the Vancouver Whitecaps, and Canada's recent friendly against Armenia. Now, interestingly enough, all three of those games, I'm confident to say, went exactly as I'd predicted. So I'm not sure if I'm getting smarter and more astute, or if it was just the luck of the Irish with St. Patrick's Day coming up. But let's start off with that last Los Angeles Galaxy TFC Champions League game. And before we get to talking about what happened on the pitch, I'd like to get your thoughts on the fan support and the atmosphere at the Rogers Center. You and I were both there, and the only way I could describe it is it was awesome. You know, fantastic. Right here, a huge shout out to the Toronto fans. If we can get those same people out to BMO Field and bring that same energy and passion to Canada's upcoming home qualifiers in Toronto, then I think the CSA's decision to hold those games in Toronto will be a well thought out one. So, what were your thoughts from just, watching the stands and the energy around the whole stadium?
Well, first of all, let's give an evaluation as a fan. I mean, I am definitely a fan. I was a former player, but the fan support was absolutely incredible. The city was painted in TFC red, and to support the support that the TFC received at the Rogers Center throughout the match and prior to the match, again, the city was lighted in red. And I've never seen an atmosphere like that in Toronto. I thought it was fantastic, as you said, just to have the fan support again. TFC really had the backing and support of everybody in the city, and you need that. And, you should never underestimate your presence as a fan, as a supporter. And I only wish the national team would attract much attention and fan support in the coming friendly matches and World Cup qualifying matches. But, as a player, you want to play in front of your home crowd. You want that support. It inspires you throughout the match, more so than fans think. The crowd can be the difference between winning and losing, and the key moments in the game. And I think Canadians are learning that they have that effect. They can influence the game. And it definitely showed from the stands. And you must not, as a fan, and I'm going to mention this, you must not be wavering in your support. Win, lose, or draw, you must come out and support your team. And I think, you know, almost 50,000 fans at the stadium at the Rogers Center, Steve, was an incredible sight to see up close. And the fans, again, they saw a star-studded affair with Beckham, Keane, Donovan, and Torsten Frings. I think, you know, what more do you want in a match? You know, the implications were great, and I think TFC definitely performed well. But again, if I was to evaluate the fan support, it was top class, first rate.
Yeah, you know, it might be a little bit of a hyperbole on my part, but it felt a little bit like watching a Champions League game at Camp Nou or Old Trafford. You know, I was amazed. I'm hoping I'm going to see more of it. I it wasn't completely something that took me by surprise. I know there was the Occupy Rogers Center movement, but you know, all credit to the fans and all credit to Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. They have their critics at the time, but in terms of, you know, marketing and setting up an event, they did a fabulous job, and the roar when Toronto scored their two goals was amazing. You know, in the match report that I did for Red Nation, you know, I just put it out there that the Rogers Centre has not shown that much life since 1993 when the Blue Jays last won the World Series. So, you know, 47,000 fans, an amazing atmosphere. You and I both know that you know, there's some substantial people in the Canadian sports media that aren't exactly soccer lovers. You know, does that fan support and that display, and I know the TV ratings were very good as well, does that make it a little bit harder for those naysayers in the Canadian media to ignore the sport now?
Yeah, I think so. It's about culture, right, Steve? It's definitely about supporting where you're from, and you see it in Europe. No matter how big or how small the team is, or even the sport, but in terms of football and soccer here in North America, the naysayers in the media cannot ignore that. I mean, and I think we must definitely mention that the owners of Toronto FC, I think they did a great job at promoting and marketing the match. I mean, you don't have to go to great lengths to promote David Beckham, but nevertheless, they did what they had to do. But they shouldn't be contented with that. I think they should plan to try and market as much as they can. I know they've done it in the past with the MLSE, but you must go out and support at BMO Field. I mean, what an atmosphere. And again, the naysayers in the media, whether you like soccer or not as a sport, that was an entertaining game. And you can't ignore that. You can't ignore the excitement, the fan support, and even the drama at the end. It was fantastic again.
Okay, so looking at the game on the pitch, as I stated earlier, it did kind of go as I predicted, and I thought that it would end in a draw. The reason that I thought that, it certainly wasn't what I was hoping for, but you know, I thought Toronto was going to play well. I thought that Aaron Vinter was going to have them prepared, and you know, those first 20 minutes, they played fantastic. For much of the match, you know, with the pressing and the ball movement and Torsten Frings sort of leaning things out of the back, it very much reminded me about the game that got them to this point where they won away in Dallas. So, you know, I thought they did a lot of good things on the pitch. But again, comparing them to that Dallas game, I do think Los Angeles just has that little bit more class than even FC Dallas does. And I think that was the reason why it ultimately ended up being a draw. You know, Chris, what were your general thoughts on the performance of Toronto FC and the way the game went?
Yeah, in terms of the game, Steve, in the beginning I thought TFC would be in trouble because LA looked fleet-footed. They were stringing together some positive passes, combining in the TFC defensive third. So I thought, hold on here, TFC could be in trouble here and you might get a rout at home. And that's definitely something that you don't want to happen with all that crowd support. But TFC withstood that pressure. And I believe Torsten Frings' leadership on the field with Aaron Vinter and Bob Duclerc's mentality really showed on the pitch, especially in the early parts of the game. I saw Terry Dunfield playing in his comfortable role. He strung together some passes going forward, and they attempted to get the ball forward as a team. And I thought that was key. I was impressed with Silva, the young player. I thought he was excellent, especially in his first match as a professional. And I'll get back to Silva in a second, but I want to touch on TFC's build-up. Because I think as players, when you go on the field, and especially, again, I have to mention the crowd support, you want to play. You're willing your teammates on. The crowd's willing you on as a player. And you want to do something positive. And I believe they did some positive things out wide. And they tried to get crosses in. And even though the overlaps weren't always on, they still attempted that. And it didn't always come off, but the intent was there. And I thought Ryan Johnson's goal, which ensued off a knockdown from the corner kick, he was in the right place for the right time. And I quite like Johnson. I think if he can continue to get the ball in good positions, facing at defenders and causing them some stress, some pressure, I think he can definitely be effective in one of TFC's impact players. So I think, and I'll go back to Silva now, scoring that goal, Steve, I don't know if you realize just how fantastic, just how technical that goal was to score off of one foot, his front foot, and he's going, you know, away from goal, and just to score inside that post. And what a cross from Torsten Frings, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it was Torsten Frings.
Yeah, it was.
The concentration that Silva had there was, and the concentration and technique was absolutely incredible, and kudos to the young man for following the ball and keeping his concentration again. So I thought he did well.
Yeah.
I don't want to dwell too much on the Galaxy goal, just because I am a fan, and I'm a fan of Canadian soccer and Toronto FC, but on the first goal, I have to be critical of Ashton Morgan. And Ashton Morgan has done quite well for himself. But as a former fullback, I depended on my defensive capabilities, and I felt that he should have closed down Landon Donovan towards the line and just forced him out wide towards the end line. And he didn't do that. He let him back inside, and it allowed the overlap. And he didn't get a block on the cross. And obviously, some people will blame Stefan Schrey, but I don't think so. If Ashton Morgan was to, you know, keep maintaining that pressure on Landon Donovan would have turned around, or at least they would have kicked it up for a corner kick or a throw-in. So just to be critical of Ashton Morgan, I think he has a great future, and he does fantastic things going forward, but I have to be critical of him in that instance anyway.
Yeah, you know, I think he's a 19 or 20-year-old player, and a young guy with a lot of talent in his best years ahead of him. You know, how key is it going to be for him to you know, have those coaches just sort of, you know, going on and on about the defensive aspects of the game and just, you know, really working him hard in training, because, you know, he's had a lot of success, and he's had a lot of people, you know, saying great things about him, and a lot of those things are deserved, but, you know, he's still a young man, and he's still a developing player. So, you know, is that the area that, you know, De Klerk, Vinter, and the rest of the coaching staff really need to focus on with him for the remainder of this season?
Yeah, I think so, because you can see it. He obviously has the athleticism to go forward, and he does some great things, and he looks, like I said, he is attempting crosses, early crosses as well, which is always dangerous for center backs or fullbacks, and he puts them under pressure. So, I mean, again, as a former fullback, I wouldn't want to defend him coming forward. I wouldn't know which way he's going. He has a great left foot. I think if he just listens to Bob DeClercq and Aaron Vinter, they can definitely guide him and shape his defensive ability, and he's only going to get better. He's a young player, and as I said, a great future, a bright future ahead of him, and he'll definitely learn from that. I'll tell you what, he won't make that mistake the next match if he's faced the same situation. So, yeah, I wish him all the best, and I think he'll get it right as he goes forward.
Now, looking at the team's performance as a whole, you know, whether it was due to you know, it being just the team just coming out of the preseason, they did seem to run out of steam a little bit. And, you know, the most disconcerting aspect of that game was another late goal, which is something that has always seemed to plague Toronto FC over the last few years. You know, what did you make of that late goal, and was there anything the team could have done to have prevented that? I mean, there was a certain amount of luck, but the fact that a player like Landon Donovan's always in the right spot to capitalize on that luck doesn't seem to be a coincidence for me.
Yeah, I think when you're dealing with, and I remember even while I was still playing, TFC has been, you know, it's been tragic for them because they've let in late goals. And I remember as a player, I was hearing on the news that TFC has let in another late goal, and it seems to have continued on here. And you know what, Steve, that's all comes down to concentration. And if the players are in the right spots, especially in a set piece like a corner kick, then it comes down to concentration and winning the ball defensively to get it out. And I think that, yeah, Aaron Vinter is definitely going to be disappointed with that late goal. And I've seen it a few times on the replay and just think, oh, what could they have done better? But it's just about concentration and actually winning the ball, not giving up on the play. And as you can see, Landon Donovan did not give up on the play. And it's just unfortunate for TFC because I thought they had a great performance. especially in the middle chunk of the game. I thought they did pretty well there, and just to persevere, and nobody really expected them to be up 2-0, and I'll be honest, not even myself, but I don't think they should be going into next match with their heads down. They should be definitely looking forward and looking to get a win. And Aaron Vinter will be, you bet your bottom dollar, that he'll be having those players concentrated for the full 90 minutes, or if it goes beyond that. So once again, TFC players and then the organization should not hang their heads and should be optimistic looking towards the next game.
You know, you mentioned all the big names in that game. The consensus man of the match, even with the draw, seems to have been Torsten Frings. You know, we don't really need to say much more about him. I mean, he was just fantastic in that game. You know, it just seems like watching him, you know, he seems to have more time on the ball than all the other players on the pitch. You know, I know you do some coaching as well. You know, is Torsten Frings a player that all young players should be, you know, watching very closely in terms of how he plays the game?
Well, first of all, I remember Torsten Frings as I was on trial in Germany, and I remember him as a player as well known, and definitely he has the attributes, and you can see his athleticism isn't there. He's up in age now, but on the ball, he has the sense and the savvy on the ball, and it showed on Silva's goal. Look how many yards away from the goal he played that ball from, and he found Silva. And I think he has time on the ball because of Aaron Vinter's system. He drops back into the defensive four, and yes, he's playing in that defensive midfield position, but he also drops off Terry Dunfield to receive it. And if teams allow him that space, then he's going to be dangerous, and he's going to hurt you. And I think if I was LA, I would not allow Torsten Frings. I would push up high and definitely pressure him on the ball and not allow him that space and time, because he can definitely hurt you. And I think even though Julian de Guzman is coming back, I would say, you know, if you key in on Torsten Frings, then you could probably come out as a winner. But Torsten Frings, what else can I say? He's definitely a class player, and they're a leader, and it shows. Without him, I think they're struggling. But no, he's a fantastic player again, and I'm glad that he's on TFC.
So the million-dollar question is, when the teams, you know, match up again next Wednesday, LA obviously has a bit of an advantage with those two away goals. What does Toronto FC have to do to pull out a result next week at the Home Depot Center?
Yeah, I'm a big believer in confidence in a team, and as I said, TFC should not hang their heads. They have to get the tactics right, and that's where Aaron Vinter's analysis of last game, I think he almost has to take the great points, because there were some great moments, great points in that match. He has to take that and spur on those players. And I mentioned the Ashton Morgan situation when he was defending Landon Donovan. He won't make that mistake next game. I think they'll be on their toes. They'll be buzzing. Before the match, they'll be ready. They'll be concentrated. But I think they can't hang back. I think they must definitely put pressure, apply pressure on the back four of the LA Galaxy. I don't think that, you know, they're top-class players. I think that they're athletic players, and I think TFC, if they put some pressure and if they could get Ryan Johnson facing forward and into areas where that back four, especially those center backs, are facing or on their heels and they're back towards TFC's goal, then I think they won't be able to keep up with players like Ryan Johnson. And I think also something that I didn't mention earlier, Eckersley made some overlapping runs. I think it's Eckersley to just time his runs a little bit better into the attacking third, then he could be more effective. Sometimes I felt he attacked, he overlapped, and it wasn't on all the time. So I think Aaron Vinter will be definitely in Ashton Morgan and Eckersley's ear, just to make sure that the timing of those overlapping runs comes at the right time. So it's the effective impact that they want for the match, so and to get a result.
Okay, let's get our predictions for next Wednesday on the record. As much as I'd like to see Toronto FC win, I think the problem of playing away against what I think is probably the best team in North America, you know, with that away goal advantage, is probably going to be too much to overcome. I think it's going to be close, but I think LA is probably going to gonna squeak through the next round. Chris, what do you think?
Well, I'm gonna pick TFC to win 2-1, And I'll even give you the goal scorers. I'll be picking Ryan Johnson and Silva. Again, I think that TFC is going to be filled with, blood and vinegar, and they'll be ready to go. Aaron Vinter will get the tactics right. I know that seems far-fetched because you're playing against world-class players in Donovan, David Beckham, and Keane, but I definitely hope, I hope as a Torontonian, I hope that TFC can pull through with a victory, because the city deserves it. It'll be the biggest victory in the franchise history, and I think it'll be great to see. So hopefully they can pull out a win.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Now let's move on and talk about another game that was sort of a big moment in Canadian soccer, and that was Montreal's first game in the MLS, and it came against the Vancouver Whitecaps, no less. So another all-Canadian MLS fixture. It was another game that went exactly as I expected, just given what I had seen from both teams in the preseason. In terms of those expectations, it were that Montreal was going to be a hard-working team that was going to struggle in terms of their ability to create scoring chances, and that Vancouver would look solid, but also look like a team that's sort of still putting it all together. Chris, what were your thoughts on the game?
Well, as a former player for both clubs, and the history between those two clubs is an intense rivalry on and off the field. And I don't know if you caught it, Steve. Nick DeSantis had an interview, and he made some comments prior to the match. And that intense rivalry he echoed. And he said that the two clubs, administratively, they work in unison, and they have a mutual respect and in preparing for the MLS. And I believe that to be true. But you better believe it that Nick DeSantis is part of that rivalry as a player, and that is one intense, fierce rivalry. You don't want to lose. You don't want to come second best, second place, second rate. And I think that, and there are a couple of instances, actually. So you have Martin Rennie on one hand. He's the Vancouver Whitecaps coach. And I believe at one time Martin Rennie was a candidate for the Montreal Impact to bring them in. So maybe Jesse Marsh was second choice there, but somehow he ended up at Vancouver. I don't know how. I don't know when it happened, but obviously he's the coach of Vancouver. And another point was Etienne Barbara. He's now at Vancouver Whitecaps. And I know I'm going off topic here, but just to give some background, the Impact brought him in, and the Whitecaps actually had to purchase him, which gave Montreal some cash in hand, as they say. So the two clubs have, I guess, not had the nicest time or nicest relationship off the field. So just to give you some background information about the rivalry and what it means to those two, I guess administratively, the executives and staff, it's definitely an intense rivalry. So there's no shortage of hatred between the two clubs.
You can also throw in that Maddox stating after an exhibition game that Montreal made a mistake in not picking him, so that's another storyline to follow through the season.
There you go, and in Montreal, you're dealing with some pretty strong personalities, with Joey Saputo leading the way, Nick DeSantis, Jesse Marsh, and I'm sure they don't like to lose anything, right? So they'll be disappointed with the first match because they did lose. They did come second place in terms of the performance, and I think they should be really realistic in the first match is an evaluation for themselves and to get the tactical preparation and player evaluation right. They need to improve in a few areas. And we can touch on that now during the match analysis. But, it was a great thing for Canadian soccer. Let's not forget about that. Montreal is now the third MLS club from Canada, so it's fantastic to see that.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Vancouver first, and then we'll finish off this portion of the podcast by talking about Montreal. A lot of great players in that game from Vancouver's standpoint. I thought Eric Hassley didn't score, but I thought he was great with that header on. Latou didn't take long to make an impact, no pun intended. And a lot of great players. Two players that stood out for me were two Asian players, Jun Marquez Davidson, who's not quite as heralded as some of the other new additions to the team, and of course right back young Pio Lee. What did you think of their performances? And do you think that MLS teams should be looking more towards Asia for players? Just considering it's only one game, but those guys look to be impressive players.
Yeah, there's a few few things there, because you mentioned Eric Cassidy and Sebastian Mathieu in attack. And I think actually the reason why Vancouver was so effective going forward is because of Jean-Marquez Davidson. And another player you didn't mention, but Grishin Coffey. Those two central midfielders are key to Vancouver's attack. And also, you know, to Vancouver's defense, as you could see, I don't know if you remember, but Davidson tracked back Niasse from Montreal and saved the goal with the last-ditch tackle. So those two players in central midfield are key for Vancouver, and I think the attacking players have to thank them after every game because the work rate that they put in is absolutely incredible. And I mean, it allows forward attacking players with the creativity with the likes of Kimiento, Haspley, Latu, Senviso. I think they must feel, fresh when they go onto the field, the peace of mind that, you know what, we have two players behind us and a back four that's going to support us and back us up, as they say. So from that standpoint, I think that Vancouver has it right in terms of their system. And hopefully the back four, I'll touch on a little bit, hopefully the back four can get things right. I thought, you know, early parts of the game, they should have moved it a little bit quicker, especially after the first goal. I think that they should have kept moving the ball quicker and put more pressure on the impact midfield and back four. But nevertheless, they did quite well, and they showed some great football. You touched on the Asian perspective. I remember Lee running down the line in the second half, I believe, against Niasse, and he was actually keeping pace with them. This must have been in the 70th or 80th minute, and I was thinking, geez, he's 35, and he's still running with that player. And Niasse is one of the fastest players in the league, and it's great to see. And I think so. You know, if you look at the Asian leagues, and if you look in the J-League, I think you can definitely, and even in Korea, you can find some players with some attributes that would work well in the MLS. You know, quick players, nimble players, technically gifted on the ball. And I think they're attractive. Lee does not look out of place at all at his age, and technically on the ball, he was sharp, so... And I think he'll even get better once he gets familiar with his back line and, MLS in general, the travel. Hopefully his legs stay with him, but a fantastic player to watch, and I'm glad that he's on a Canadian club because he'll create some success for them.
Yeah, certainly I think the back line is really where, that's really what's going to determine how far Vancouver goes this year. The offense is amazing, but it's going to be, injuries and then how well that back line comes together. They certainly did well in that game, but it is a little bit hard to judge against Montreal just because they don't have as much talent in the forward positions. Looking at that back line, there were the commentators on that match, Luke Wildman and Jason DeVos made an interesting comment about how each four of those players' primary language is different, so that there might be some communication issues there. You know, how long do you think it'll take for veteran and talented players like that, but still learning to play together? How long is it going to take for that back line to come together and be really fully functioning as a well-oiled machine?
Yeah, I'm sure during preseason they've worked on it. I mean, no matter what the nationality, language, I think as a back four, as a coach, you work on your back four and goalkeeper in pressure situations, and they would have done that in preseason. It's going to take them a few games. I thought they did okay. I mean, they had a clean sheet, and that's always something to be proud of. So, but it's going to take a few games. I would think by their sixth, seventh game, they'll be firing on all cylinders, and hopefully Jay DeMeritt won't be running forward and trying to get in the attack. But, I think it'll take some time, but they're all professionals, and they've had long careers. They're experienced players. So I think Bonjour needs to adjust himself to the MLS pace and physicality of the league, but I think he'll definitely do that eventually, and they have great cover in Carlisle, the young Trinidadian Mitchell. So I think they'll get it right. They'll get it right. It'll take them a few games. And Steve, you know, it's kind of scary. I remember Eric Cassidy chasing down one of the Montreal Impact attackers to help out the defenders at some point in the first half. So if you have that work rate for your forward players, I think the back four will get it right eventually.
Looking at Montreal, a couple questions to throw at you, after that first game is, obviously it was their first game in the league, do you think that they'll get better as the season goes along? And given the makeup of the team, do you think following sort of the same tactical approach that Portland used last year to be quite competitive you know, in which it was a hard-working team focused on defense, and then, you know, just finding ways to break out a goal here and there in order to be competitive. Is that the approach that you think Jesse Marsh needs to emulate as the season goes along?
I think he actually does. That's a great point, Steve. I think he has to do that, but I'm not too sure if he has the players to do it. Portland, I played against some of those players in Portland, and those are workmanlike players, and they're gritty and definitely have the work ethic to play that system. But I'm not too sure. I think that Montreal will try and play. I think Jesse Marsh, because of his confidence and his pedigree, his background, he'll try and play, and I don't think he has the players to do so. I think Justin Mapp is quite capable on the ball, and he shows some good things moving forward, but I think when you start to put players like Davey Arnault out wide, then you're struggling a little bit. I think he's out of place in that position, and they're not dynamic enough. And not to be too critical of Montreal, but you have to have the right players in place if you want to play with teams like Vancouver, especially Vancouver with the attacking prowess that they have. You have to have players who are fleet-footed, athletic, and I just think that Montreal doesn't have that, so they need to employ that workman-like tactic. And I'm not too sure those players want to do it even. I look at the player Felipe and in the middle there, and I don't know, he has some quality to him, but I'm not sure if he has that, you know, that engine to do that work like a Davidson or a Coffey would have. So I think Jesse Marsh has to go back to the drawing board and really tactically assess his team and figure out who's willing to put in the effort. They have a huge home opener coming up, and they don't want to disappoint those fans, and I hope that those players are ready for that, because the Montreal fans deserve a great team, and it's been a long time coming for Montreal and the MLS, so hopefully Jesse Marsh and co. can get the tactics right and get the players believing in the system.
Anyone that's been following the Impact knows that the team has been working to try and bring in, you know, a big-name player and a DP, and I think most of us are expecting that DP will be a very traditional one in terms of trying to bring in a scorer who looks like he's sorely needed in the lineup. How important is it for Montreal to bring in a DP this year, even if it's in the summer? And you know, how much difference will that make given the makeup of the current squad?
I think they have to add a player who's dynamic and has some pace. I believe that they will do it probably in the summer, but they have to get that right, because if they're getting a player who's just coming for a vacation, then it's not going to work. If they're going to have a player in who's injury-plagued at all times, then it's not going to work, and it would be a waste of space, a waste of money. So they have to get that right, and I hope that Joey Saputo can do that, and I hope they've done their homework, because it's important, it's vital to their team especially that they have a player in, because especially a forward, because I look at their makeup of the team, and they need to have some type of firepower. I know they have Niasse, but he's a young lad, and I think that the pressure on their shoulders will be too great for him. So hopefully they can bring someone in with some quality, and my thoughts are they're probably going to look to Italy. There have been some rumors around, but hopefully the player comes in and he's ready to put in the work and contribute as he should.
Okay. As we mentioned off the top, our first guest on the North of 49 podcast is none other than Julien de Guzman. Chris, you've known Julien for a number of years, so why don't you go ahead and set up that interview?
Great to have a special guest on our North of 49 podcast. Today we have Julien de Guzman, one of Toronto FC's designated players, first ever Canadian to play in La Liga, and a Canadian international. Julien, it's great to have you.
Julien, looking back at the beginning of your career, you began your career at Marseille in France, but had to go to Germany to achieve first-team football. Back in 1997, what was it like being a Canadian playing in France?
Yeah, I remember leaving at a young age, at 16. I mean, before that, I was in Europe at the age of 15, training in Holland. And I remember it didn't work out for me, but it was an opportunity for me to grasp the European culture and hands-on European football. But I had the second chance of getting a taste of Europe going to France at 16, and for me, those 3 years in Marseille was probably the hardest experience in my career, biggest challenge of my career as well. And it was something where I wanted for myself, it was a dream, and just living and experiencing other people's moments in Europe, Canadians who were even just better technically than myself. I clearly remember them going overseas, and they weren't able to adapt to the culture. They got homesick, and that was always a story, a common story for Canadians to experience when they first go to Europe. And that's one thing I kind of prepared myself for mentally before going to France, was the mental aspect, just preparing myself mentally, and also reminding myself how much I really love the game. And I think my passion for the game was something that prevailed for myself in going overseas and being able to succeed. So those 3 years definitely was a huge culture shock for myself. And I mean, in those times we never had internet. We didn't. But, I remember just writing letters to friends just to keep in touch. But at the same time, I was focused, and this was a dream that I didn't want to slip away, and or become another Canadian who goes overseas and was not able to adapt or adjust to the culture. So that's one thing I wanted to overcome, and 3 years definitely taught me that in Marseille. So going into my last year at Marseille, I remember the technical director had a one-on-one talk with me, and just told me that they're not going to renew my contract, or they don't see me becoming professional in Marseille nor anywhere professionally in Europe. And his words was for me to kind of return back home and basically continue life there. So I after that meeting, I was grateful for everything, for the experience, and had a call up to the national team in Duisburg for the under-20s. And from that point, I did well at the camp, and discovered by Saarbrücken, and they invited me to come out to visit their city and see how I felt about it. And I guess it was a blessing in disguise, being released by Marseille and going to the camp in Duisburg with the national team. And the moment I landed in Saarbrücken, I was just pleased to have another opportunity. And that's where my career in Germany has pretty much started.
Julian, you alluded to playing in the moment, playing in France, playing in Germany, and people often read about you and think, kind of just take for granted that it was predestined, that you were a star player in Germany and became the first Canadian to play in La Liga. How much perseverance did it take on your part to actually achieve those things?
Well, I mean, already the 3 years that I had in France definitely prepared me for that next step. I knew from that point on, going to Germany, this is what I wanted, and I knew at any moment that comes across for any Canadian is a huge opportunity. And my dream before going to Europe was just to be in Europe, play in Europe, and play at any professional level. It didn't matter where. I definitely ignored the whole scholarship route. I mean, that was pretty much the other route for myself, and Europe is what I wanted. So being in Germany, I playing with Saarbrücken, started with the second team, and then I just worked my way after the first year. At the end of the first year, I got my professional debut. I realized how fast everything could change for any professional, especially in Germany. This was something that they would tell me, and then I had that professional offer at the end of my first season at Saarbrücken. So going into my first season at Saarbrücken, I played the first 4 or 5 games until the coach got released, and then didn't play for about 6 months. And at the end, that was another task I had to overcome, was being able to withstand not being able to play, not being accepted, new coaches. It was a new, experience for myself at a professional level, being with my first professional team. And once that second coach had got fired, Tom Dooley was the third coach that season. The team was already struggling, and we were fighting for relegation. But he kind of turned to, the young players, including myself. And I played the last at least 10 games of that season, and the team ended up getting relegated. became a free agent, which was, I guess, another blessing in disguise, because that same season, Hanover was in that second division, and they got promoted, and they took me along with them. So, and then next thing you know, I realized, you know, after being 2 years in Germany, I found myself in a Bundesliga team, playing in the Bundesliga. So at the age of 21, I mean, realizing how everything just turned around for myself, it was just a shock, and I was enjoying it and learning as much as was possible along the way. After 3 years at Hanover, then I was signed to Deportivo La Coruña, and I mean, that's my third country in about 8 years now. And it was again a new culture shock. It was a surprise, but that's one thing I learned about the game. No matter the situation, no matter the circumstances, I mean, you being Canadian, playing at any level in Europe, that's something that it's a huge achievement, and it's something I was grateful for. And my goal was always just to play in Europe at a professional level. Never had any specific countries or places I wanted to play at, but. Before you know it, at the age of 24, after living in Europe for about 7 years now of my career, I found myself in the Liga, and from there, playing 4 years in Spain, that was probably one of the best experiences of my career.
Julian, France, Germany, and Spain are all soccer superpowers. They all have, you know, differences to how they approach the game and how they play it, how they train their players, and you know, even the style of play in those leagues. As a Canadian, what were some of the main things that you came up against in terms of having to adapt to living and playing in those countries?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, the impression they get from you being a Canadian, it's the first thing they look at is, I mean, should you be wearing skates? And I mean, around that time, it wasn't common for many Canadians to be playing in Europe, especially at a high level. I clearly remember, too, in France, they thought I spoke French, and which I didn't. But I had, I guess, a little understanding of it. But they didn't accept anything else but French, so I was forced to learn that language and kind of remind myself that I have to kind of become one of them just to be accepted. But deep down inside, I mean, they know that I'm not one of them. I'm Canadian, so it was something. It was a big task and a challenge for myself to work with, and knowing that, you know, coming from one of the, you know, best countries to live in the world it was also an honor to represent overseas and kind of make, I guess, change heads to know that you could also play soccer. So doing that in France, Germany, and also Spain. It was always a tough task, and I mean, I did this with my Canadian passport. Not once did I change my passport or give up my passport. It was a different experience for myself, and I really enjoyed it. And at the same time, I was honored to represent my country in the biggest league in the world.
Julian, while playing in Spain, you've definitely had your fair share of big matches, and obviously the two clubs that jumped out are Real Madrid and Barcelona, and you would have lined up against players like Ronaldinho, Zidane, Guti, Beckham, players that you watched on TV before you became a pro, probably. How did you play in those games against those players? And I'm sure you idolized those players when you were younger.
Yeah, it was something... that's never forget. And I mean, even playing in Germany, you playing against you know, one of the greatest Bayern Munich teams ever, and you know, facing up against them, it was also a huge shock. And you watch these guys on TV, and you dream of just you know, maybe even watching a live game of these guys, but you're actually on the pitch covering them and doing everything possible to, I guess, win for your team. But it was huge for me. It was something that I will never forget. And one thing I always did in every game I played in professionally was change my jersey, and that's something it was a great reminder, a huge souvenir, just to remember that you know, you played against actually the greatest in the world, and then going into La Liga, it's week in and week out, the role that I had as a defensive midfielder, you're running up against the best attacking midfielders and strikers in the world. And you know, from David Villa, De Silva, Messi, Raquel Mabe, Ronaldinho, Zidane, you name it, you could just, from that point, I just knew I was in the best league in the world, and it was also my favorite league, a league that I followed deeply growing up in Canada. And as a Canadian now, I was actually a part of it, and it was huge for me, for my experience, and also something to cherish for the rest of my life, to remember as a Canadian playing at that level. So dealing with that for 4 years in La Liga, it definitely changed my game as well. I learned a lot, and I thought that I was you know, on my peak playing in that league, and especially even the guys around me were also quality players, and you know, guys such as Tristan Valeron, Molina. It was great to just have that experience every day in and out as a Canadian.
Julian, looking back a couple of years, I distinctly remember, you know, following you on the internet, and at that time there were a lot of rumors about clubs that were interested in you prior to your signing with Toronto FC. I'm curious, you know, if you hadn't signed with TFC, where do you think you might have ended up playing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I had an opportunity to renew my contract at Deportivo La Coruña. That was one option. And also, there were a couple other options coming from La Liga and Germany as well. But the thing is, with that being said, I mean, I've kind of could look back and say I've had my experience in Germany, had my experience in France, and also in Spain. And the option to come to Toronto FC was also one of my dreams I've had, you know, listed. And it was something that I've always wanted to experience, to finally play in your hometown, in front of your home fans at a professional level. It was a dream that I imagined and wished for growing up as a Canadian in Toronto. I mean, growing up, the only thing you had to look forward to was either a scholarship, Toronto Lynx, or make a risk and go overseas. And now that I'm back home after almost 13 years of Europe, that has changed around. And to be a part of this this dream and this turnaround in Canadian football, this is also something I wanted to be involved in. And that ended up becoming my number one decision, was coming back home and being a part of this this wonderful journey at a professional level in your hometown. So it's something I've always wanted to experience as a professional in my career. And I mean, you grow up in, or you experience as a Canadian, you know, you're overseas, you're away from home, you're away from everything, but you get to see guys in Spain who have their whole families or playing in front of their hometown. And I mean, even in Germany as well, and they get to share it with you on how much it feels to play, you know, in their home city in front of their fans at a professional level. And that's something I've always wanted to experience myself. So that was definitely a huge influence in my decision.
Julian, after taking that risk, going over to Europe, and after playing there and living in Europe for, you said, almost 13 years, did you have a chance to readapt to living in Canada? Did you have to readapt to living in Canada, playing in the MLS? How hard was that for you?
Yeah, I mean, that was also a challenge for myself. I mean, being so attached and you know, just aware of what it's like playing in Europe, just the mentality, the culture. Coming back to Toronto, I realized like it's different. And I mean, one huge factor I kind of remember myself adapting to was definitely the travel. That's something that takes time, I guess, to adjust to, how much you need to recover from, you know, traveling and playing for so long, playing games, just preparing yourself for those moments. And then also, the style of play was also new. It's very fast, physical, and you're playing games week in and week out. So as opposed to Europe, where you're only traveling on a bus, maybe maximum, you know, 3 hours, or on a plane for 2 hours or an hour and a half, and then playing a game just only once a week. Different than doing that here in the MLS. You're playing three games in a week. And you're traveling almost 10 hours, sometimes 15 hours in that week. So that was a big difference in my experience in Europe and then coming here. And it definitely took time for me to adjust to that. So, but one thing I noticed about myself, I've always been a student of the game, and always been willing to learn and adapt to new cities, new mentalities, new cultures. And I think, you know, like my experience in Europe has definitely taught me to become strong mentally and withstand any situation and never back down.
Julian, ESPN's Adrian Healy has recently been quoted as saying that he believes that the MLS is a top 10 league in the world, and MLS Commissioner Don Garber has often been quoted as saying that he wants the MLS to be a top league, right up there with the EPL, La Liga, the Bundesliga, and Serie A. Do you think the MLS can become a top-tier league? And if so, you know, why do you think that, or why do you not think that?
I definitely believe that it's working its way in that direction, and a lot of people misjudge MLS. I guess it's first and foremost, I guess it has to do with it's the way the structure has been laid out. I mean, in Europe, automatically it's about relegation and promotion, and it's about staying in that league and earning a spot. So, but here it's a bit different. It's North American related with the other sports involved in the continent, and but in terms of the quality of the league, I could definitely say that MLS is working way up to like the top 10 tier leagues in the world, and I strongly believe it will just get better, you know, throughout the years. The way this league is, again, it's very physical, it's very fast, and there's a lot of good quality players coming up from each team. If you notice, there's even a lot of players that find themselves going overseas to Europe and doing well coming out of the MLS. And I think that, you know, now that they have players coming from Europe, giving the league a good name and teams doing well also in CONCACAF Champions League, that definitely has some type of say to what type of league the MLS is. So it has everything in the right you know, positions and situations for this league to continue to make that step to a higher level, and also gain more respect. So it's been great for myself. I think it's also great for the young talents that we have here in Toronto. I mean, for me, I look at how a lot of the young guys in Toronto never had something like this before during my time growing up, and now we have something, you know, just in our backyard, you know, equipped to groom and develop top talents at a professional level, just in the city alone. So it definitely betters the country as well, and it continues to draw a lot of attention. And I think that in the next couple of years, you know, 3 to 5 years, people will start to gain a lot of respect worldwide for the MLS.
Julian, when you left Canada at 15, 16 years old, did you ever imagine the growth in soccer in Canada that we have seen over the last several years due to the MLS coming to our country?
I never imagined that. It was always a dream for myself to be a part of, I guess, a professional atmosphere in Canada. And, I mean, the closest thing that I could relate to is probably playing for the men's national team. And that was already a huge achievement and a dream for, I believe, any Canadian. And but to have your own club team play week in, week out, and homegrown talents being recognized, I think that was a huge dream and wish that I've always wanted to experience. And now that it's happening here, it's just great to witness, live and also to be a part of. And for myself, I think that if it continues to be like that, I mean, we'll see a difference in just the qualities and talents that comes out of this city alone, just Toronto. So for me, it's one thing I even noticed too. You see, Canadians or Torontonians just coming up through their own systems in the cities, and you see themselves doing well. And it means a lot to me just to know how much it's just changed since I left home. So it's great to witness. It's great to be a part of, and I could only imagine this whole experience is getting a lot better, not just for myself, but for a lot of other Canadians and talents to come out of the city.
Julian, probably along with Dwayne De Rosario, you've sort of been, one of the main faces of Canadian soccer over the last number of years. And you've had plenty written about you by the Toronto media in your time with Toronto FC. Given your experiences with the football media in Europe, what do you think the soccer media can do better in Canada?
Well, I could say that with the soccer media in Canada, it's not the number one sport. It's in competition with a lot of other sports. Such as hockey, basketball, baseball. The thing in Europe, it's the main sport, and that's all you hear every day. And I think that's all that you know of. And now that I'm here and I get to see how everything is with the media and how the soccer culture is in Toronto, it's definitely improving. It's improved a lot. It's never had this much attention in the past, and it's only been, just a couple of years since we've had a professional team. So I think with success, at the same time, you'll see a lot of changes in the media and how the game is approached, and it's become a huge educational, moment for a lot of people, and a lot of people who've given the game support and attention, and the media in Toronto is that's one thing that they've been doing for the fans of the game, and also the culture of the game. It's they're educating a lot of people, so I think that's important for the media for starters in Toronto, and then at some point down the road it will become hopefully one day the most popular sport one of the most popular sports in the continent, or even in the country of Canada. So, but again, that will come with success, and to have media the way it is now, it's great. It's drawn a different type of pressure, and I think that's one thing the game has been missing was the attention in terms of fans and also media in the past, and that's something that we do have now, and it's definitely changing the game.
Julian, obviously the state of the youth development has changed considerably since you were a teenager competing in Toronto. What do you think is the biggest difference in youth development when comparing the present with when you were first starting out?
Yeah, the thing now with youth development is, I remember starting out, all we had was the provincial program, and you'd only train twice, maybe sometimes once a week, and that was the only time you get to actually showcase your talent and your abilities to be one of the best out of just the region. And playing in the Nationals was a huge thing, and that's something I guess not a lot of people would hear of, but only if you're in the part of the soccer community, that was probably the highlight, and being a part of that was a huge achievement. So now it's about being in part of the system at a younger age, and you're training every day. You're getting you're involved in a professional environment, and that's definitely a huge change in from bringing up youth players and grooming talents from before and now. So it's good to see these young guys walk into the stadium and. They're looking up at you as, one day this is where I'm going to be. And growing up over my time, we never really had that. It was only turning the TV on, and then you get to imagine, and the rest is depending on what you do on your own time. But now it's good to see that has changed, and it's pretty much related to how it is in Europe. And starting them from young, it's always been it's been an important key factor in bringing up good talent, and that's why, I mean, I forced myself to leave at 16, and I even forced my brother to leave at the age of 12 to find himself in a professional environment, and I think that's where it all starts. So now that we have this again in Toronto, and it's great to see that has changed in the academy. And it's also great to see, again, young players walk in at BMO Stadium at a young age and be a part of that professional feeling.
All right, here we are back on the first episode of the North of 49 podcast. MLS 2012 has kicked off. And Chris, you and I have chatted about the Canadian MLS teams already. That said, I think we would be remiss if we didn't talk a little bit about the reigning MLS MVP, Canadian international Dwayne De Rosario. After playing for three MLS clubs in 2011, De Rosario now seems to be settled with DC United, with the club in which he's now plying his trade. He's the main man on the team, and he's there with a contract that he appears to be satisfied with. DC United has a successful history in the MLS, but has suffered some lean years recently. Chris, do you see DC as a good place for Dwayne to possibly play out his career? And do you think he can lead the team back to the MLS playoffs?
Yeah, Dwayne, he is Canadian. I think sometimes maybe people forget that, even in the U.S. And he's finally earned his MLS improved contract, and he definitely has earned it. First of all, congrats to Dwayne on earning that contract. I know how much passion Dwayne has for the sport. And in his early days training in Scarborough, Ontario, Dwayne's work rate and self-belief was there. And it's easy to justify Dwayne's contract for DC from a DC perspective just because of his performances last year. Dwayne has always been, the catalyst for strong performances and wins for DC, and they have struggled in recent years. And I think Dwayne is the player to get them back to the playoffs. I think he has a strong supportive cast now, and Ben Olsen and the young coach that he is. I think you'll have that team ticking and firing on all cylinders, and they'll push for a playoff spot. I'll definitely predict that. I think Dwayne is the man, as they say, and he will. It's great for Canadians to be honored as well, recognized on that level. Dwayne's played with, seems like he's played with every club in the MLS, especially in 1 year, and to still perform. And I think, he must be exhausted, but he showed game in, game out that he has the will to play, the passion, and definitely the ability to be a game changer. The MLS supported the contract as well, and I think that shows a lot what Dwayne means to the league, and it's about time. So, good for Dwayne. Well done. Young Canadian players should really look and take heed and be inspired by that. Dwayne's a Canadian and a good one at that, and he's representing the country. At the top level in North America, so well done.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think with De Rosario in there for a full year, DC United certainly have a chance, especially in the Eastern Conference. De Rosario, can be a polarizing figure for some people, but I've always been, one of those who's been willing to criticize him when I think he's been in the wrong, such as with the check signing incident in Toronto, but also someone who really thinks that he doesn't always get the credit that he deserves as well. So there's two things I'd like to say about De Rosario. Whether you like or dislike some of the things he has to say, he does a great job of keeping Canadian soccer and the MLS in the news. And for me, that's generally a good thing. And second of all, when it comes to his contract, people talk about, does he deserve to be a DP? Does he not deserve to be a DP? I've always thought that he deserves, to be compensated well and to be one of the highest players in the league, because I think he is someone who's played a really big role in building the MLS into what it is today. I think he deserves that. Do you think he gets enough credit as sort of, one of the top MLS players of all time?
Yeah, I think his name he fizzles out in terms of people don't always recognize him, but then he pops up and scores a fantastic goal and it's heard around the world. And even when I was playing in Europe, I remember Dwayne scored a fantastic goal during the All-Star game, and I think, it was heard around the world. And I think that, again, I said he fizzles out in and out of people's minds, but Dwayne definitely deserves this DP status contract. And I think even Thierry Henry has mentioned that Dwayne's the top player in MLS, and I wouldn't disagree with Thierry Henry. I would say Thierry Henry has definitely seen his fair share of players and great players. So Dwayne, if I was to pick a team, start a team, I would definitely have Dwayne De Rosario on my at my club and being the catalyst, as I said, for change and for to make an impact and to ultimately win championships. And Dwayne has proven that, and he's shown that in his MVP honors. So again, well done, Dwayne, and thanks for representing Canada.
Yeah, and not to forget, but Dejan Jakovic is also on that team. You know, one of our best young central defenders. So, you know, DC United is certainly a team for Canadian soccer fans to watch this year. Dwayne De Rosario did not play in Canada's recent friendly in Cyprus against Armenia, but our guest this week, Julian De Guzman, did. And I have to say, I thought he played pretty well in a losing effort. You know, one more time, this match was, it pretty much played out the way that I thought it would. You know, I always hope that Canada's going to do well and that they play well, even if the result doesn't come out the way we want it to. But I figured the odds were really against them in this one, you know, going up to the point where, you know, it was going to be a hard battle to come out with a win or a draw. You know, what were your thoughts on the match and, you know, just the situation surrounding it and leading up to it?
Well, I'll reverse that in terms of, I'll speak about the latter first. First of all, I think Armenia is an interesting opponent. I believe Steven Hart may have wanted to schedule a different opponent, or maybe not have wanted to play an international game at all, just because of the players that he had available. He wasn't bringing in the MLS players, which, you know, obviously we just mentioned Dwayne, and he did have Julian De Guzman in, which I thought it was one of Julian's better games that I've seen him play in a while. I think he had a strong performance, and he contributed to the goal. And when I see Kevin McKenna up for that goal, I'm thinking, well, Canada's in it, and they're gonna have a win here, because they showed well in the first few minutes, and I really thought that they were gonna come out with a victory. But Armenia was relentless with their attack, and I think that's actually a good test. And as I alluded to, Canada may not have wanted to play just because getting players back from injury, Tiba Hutchinson, and they even had young Samuel Piet, who is from Quebec, I believe. But they brought in players like that to evaluate, and that just shows you where Steven Hart was at. It's difficult as a national team coach to schedule a game like that. You may not always have the players in to pull them away from the team and their clubs. Their injury status may be different, you know, across the board. So I think it's a difficult challenge for Steven Hart, obviously, especially from traveling perspective. And there are many different factors, but again, we should look at the positives. Steven Hart had a chance to evaluate the players, and had a chance to evaluate young players in Samuel Piet. So I'm not too sure of your thoughts, Steve, but Canada was tested from a defensive standpoint, and I think that's something that we should look out for, that they're going to be faced with that. You know, that pressure situation that they're going to be faced with in CONCACAF is definitely going to be present. So hopefully they've learned from that result. And Steven Hart as well. I think he won't be scheduling any more games with Armenia.
Well, I mean, we knew about the issues the team faced heading into that match. I think they had almost no preparation. You know, teams were being sticklers about not releasing the players, you know, 1 minute earlier than the 48-hour window. So it was a hard team to put together. I believe there was like a deluge of rain that they haven't seen in over 100 years in Turkey, so the team had very little training time. We knew going in that you know, both Atiba Hutchinson and Josh Simpson, two key players, were both a little bit out of form, with Atiba coming back from injury and Josh missing some playing time recently due to contract issues. So yeah, but looking at the pros, you know, and I think the first pro is just that, you know, anytime that team gets together and plays, there's a pro to it, and hopefully they're learning something, and hopefully relationships are being built. Kevin McKenna played 90 minutes with David Edgar, and that could be a really important relationship for the World Cup qualifiers. Armenia, while not a CONCACAF team, are an attacking team, you know, with some similar qualities to Honduras and Panama in that attacking sense, and they highlighted some defensive issues for Canada. So hopefully, you know, the coaching staff's going over the tape and looking at the things they need to correct. And then lastly, for me, just great to see Atiba back. You know, he wasn't quite at his best, but he had a few moments. And, you know, just seeing him back in the kit and playing is, you know, a reassuring sight for me. So let's end off this first episode of the North of 49 podcast by getting you to talk about some of the challenges that Canada faces, you know, just competing at the international level. You've played for Canada, so you're privy to the challenges and sort of the, you know, the things that go on competing at that level, competing in the CONCACAF region. And I think you have a perspective that only comes with someone who's been involved with the program. So, Chris, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, we have to remember, when the time's right, Stephen Hart will have the players in that he needs to qualify or at least to make an attempt to qualify. So let's not forget, if at all costs, he will have those players in, and the players that you mentioned, and there will be no issue. Being a former national team player, I can tell you a few stories that I'll leave from off of the podcast, just because I don't think the CSA would want to hear those on the podcast. But it's a challenge, as I said, for Stephen Hart, just to get the players in, and the challenges that he faces. Canada, even Canada, is looked upon, you know, not every country wants to play Canada. Where are they going to improve in terms of their ranking when they play Canada, if they beat, win, lose, or draw? You know, Canada is not looked upon as a formidable opponent all the time. So it's a struggle. And don't forget the financial part of it. Money is always a part of this, and it doesn't always work for the CSA. They have to budget this, and they have to plan, and sometimes they don't even have an opportunity to plan. It's just something that's scheduled. Maybe Stephen Hart or whoever the national team coach is at the time needs to see some players and evaluate. So I think fans, especially fans, and I'm a fan now, you want to see Canada playing, you know, the likes of England, the Netherlands, Brazil. But it's not always the case. There's so many different factors. And it's just, I think we have to be patient as fans and also patient with the players because they're coming off of seasons. You know, they're in the middle of their season. Maybe they have a little injury. And they don't even want to travel, but, you know, they're being loyal to their country, to their coach, and they come in. So I think we have to remember that there should always be a positive coming out of these types of games, just from an evaluation standpoint. So I won't go into too much depth there, but there's definitely challenges. And hopefully, again, like I said, Stephen Hart will have those players in at the right time to get a qualifying, get past and through the qualifying round. So wish him all the best.
Thank you for listening to the North of 49 podcast. We're interested in your feedback. If you have comments or a suggestion for a topic that you'd like covered on the podcast, please email us at steveb@rednationonline.ca.